From Decatur to Dunwoody, from Tucker to Toco Hills, from Chamblee to Stone Mountain, this is the voice of commerce in DeKalb County. Now, broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Decatur, this is DeKalb Business Today.
And welcome into another edition of DeKalb Business Today and DeKalb Business Radio. My name is Matt Holmes. I'll be your host for the next 30 to 45 minutes. An esteemed panel joining us from in and around the Tucker North Lake Community Improvement District to talk about business in that area. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to invite you to follow us on Twitter at DeKalb Radio X. Make sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/DeKalb Business Radio X. Obviously, you can listen to us live every Friday on DeKalb.BusinessRadioX.com and catch our podcast on iTunes as well. That's a free download if you want to catch up on the latest and greatest on the DeKalb County business scene. Now, without further ado, let's introduce that esteemed panel I mentioned just a moment ago. Sitting to my right, Charles DeWitt, the president and CEO of Resurgence Bank. Good morning. Appreciate you joining us.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about how you came to start your own bank, not quite a decade old, I guess.
Right. We started the bank in 2008, and we were just looking for an opportunity to come in with the big banks trying to do a one-size-fits-all, and we just thought a more tailored approach to our community. And there was not a community bank, really, there's only a couple in DeKalb County. So we thought it was a great opportunity to do that and launched the bank in June of 2008, and shortly thereafter, the world started falling apart with the Great Recession, as we now call it. So we just safely and surely just navigated through those waters.
All these smaller banks getting eaten up and gobbled up by the bigger banks. What's the secret to you guys staying independent?
We want to be independent. And we love being independent. We love being local. And we love that banks are being acquired, because the bigger the bank, the more difficult it is to kind of tailor their approach. And we have found that we just kind of roll up our sleeves and try to make good sense. We can make good loans and have long-term relationships.
All right, we'll talk more about Resurgence Bank. We'll kind of talk about that oh crap moment when you open in 2008 and then everything kind of goes haywire. So we'll talk about that. I want to introduce our second guest, Bill Rosenfeld. He is the president of Rosenfeld's Jewelry over there on La Vista Road in Tucker. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, and it's great to be here.
So how long have you been in that location?
We've been there 13 years.
Right across from Tucker High School.
Pretty close.
And so talk to me a little bit about the jewelry business. How did you get started in that?
Well, actually, I had a friend got me introduced to this in about, 25 years ago, and I loved it.
It's not just something you can do. It requires some expertise, right?
Correct. And I paid my dues sitting on the bench, you know, doing all kinds of little things, sizing rings and setting stones, that type thing.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to talking more with you about that. Our third guest is Ben Kushner. He is the head of Ben F. Kushner Company, doing some commercial real estate. You can follow them on Twitter at the BFKCO. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So tell me a little bit about how you got started. I'm real excited to have you, because you go on anybody's website, basically, and you click, there's a little bio, and on your website, there's like a generic vanilla paragraph bio. Then on the right side of the page, you get Ben's memoir, chapter by chapter. It's very fascinating. It reads like an actual memoir. You've been in the business a long time.
Yeah, I've been in the business since 1972, and been writing my memoir since then. I mean, I was a writer. That was my background, writer in broadcast journalism, too. I got my start mainly because I couldn't get hired what I wanted to do. And somebody said, well, maybe you ought to try real estate. And since anybody would hire you on a commission-only basis, that's how I got started in 1972.
We talk about commercial real estate developers, and there's one of them in the media that sticks out, especially right now, that being Donald Trump. You guys are basically in the same line of work. What are your thoughts on him?
He's a great real estate developer. He's a great marketeer of real estate. Marketing is really sort of a weak spot. I think, he's basically become a TV personality and now a presidential candidate that you can't really transfer business skills to politics the way a lot of people think you can. I mean, in business, you know, if I say something or if Trump says something, everybody does it. There's no bifurcation of power. I mean, you know, so there's no legislature to deal with. So you have, you know, it takes political skill. It's a different skill set. But I think he's touched a nerve in America who dissatisfied with their politicians and like people to speak bluntly and so forth. So he's not my choice, but we'll see how it goes.
We're going to talk more about your development that you have coming to the La Vista Road area there in Tucker coming up in just a minute. But just to give our listeners an idea, how many different projects do you have? How many balls are you juggling right now across the country, around the world?
Well, basically, my business is regional in the Southeast. We had 26 or 28 shopping centers as of 2007, and I kind of saw the trend where it was going, and we sold most of our properties in 2007. But we had this one in Tucker. I'd say right now we only have about 12 or 13 properties, but you know, you have to time when to buy and have to time when to sell.
And how big a staff do you have working for you to manage all of that?
I have a very small staff. I have three women who work in my office who handle the administrative part, and they do a great job. I have a development coordinator, Jacob Lang, who does a splendid job of handling the day-to-day nuts and bolts of the development process. I have a great leasing director, Calvin Stevenson, who works very hard, and he coordinates all of our leasing and management. And I have a good maintenance engineer, and I also have a young fellow who was in one of my classes that I teach at Kennesaw State, who's come on as sort of a to do anything that needs to be done, David Camara. So you know, it's a small staff. You really, you know, managing a real estate company is much easier than, you know, managing a company that has products and manufacturing or things like that. I mean, you can really do it, you know, with simple software in terms of the administrative part. If it took any more than that, I wouldn't be able to do it.
You're listening to Cab Business Today on Cab Business Radio. My name is Matt Holmes. Let's get back with you, Charles. Charles DeWitt, the president and CEO of Resurgence Bank. You mentioned that you opened your doors in 2008. And then obviously everything kind of falls apart economically. It was a tough time in the country. For any entrepreneur, for anybody who's going out on their own, they're going to have those reservations and be nervous about things from the outset. But then you compile it with that. What was the thought process as all that's happening?
I think you said it earlier. Oh, crap. to start a bank is a process. And so that process really began close to 18 months before we actually opened the door. So, you know, back in the beginning of 07, we didn't see the kind of economic downturn and certainly the severity of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were obviously some signs. So, you know, fast forward, we open our doors, you know, we have plans, you know, to grow and to make good loans to good folks. And the good folks weren't borrowing.
Right.
And the questionable folks were coming in and asking, you know, for debt. And in our business, our business is a very thin margin business. You know, when we get, you know, 5-6%, we can't afford to make too many mistakes, because if you lose $1 million in principal, it takes a long time to make that up. So we just really began to have a very deliberate and careful approach to lending. And so we would make sure that we were kind of dotting our I's and crossing our T's. And as we went through this recession, we were growing a lot smaller than we thought, or a lot less fast, let's say,
sure,
than we had originally planned. But now 7 years passed, you know, we've, knock on wood, have had extraordinarily good credit quality, and now we're seeing the growth trajectory that we thought may have been realized back in, you know, the 2008-2009 range.
A lot of banks, a lot of lending institutions, they went belly up at
yep.
that time.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys stick it out?
Two things. One, timing's everything. So we didn't have the legacy assets that a lot of banks, you know, if a bank got started in 2005, they probably had some issues. But a lot of banks made big, big bets on land, and that's where those failures came. So you would see a bank with a large tract of land that they were going to work with their client on and develop those and sell those lots to home builders. We didn't do that. It's never been really a core competency of ours, and that's what drove a lot of the problems. As I've told other people, I think this was an equal opportunity recession. Everybody got hit in some form or fashion. We just tried to kind of stick to what we knew.
How do you attract new customers? Because it seems like there's a bank on every corner, and it can be tough. Okay, this bank has free checking, so maybe I check that out. But how do you make that that connection with potential customers?
It's really about our people. So for us, a lot of our businesses, our customer base are small business. So, and those relationships are really between the folks that we have on our team and just going out and talking to folks, you know, working their centers of influence. And it's a people business. I mean, I can send out direct mail all day long, and I'd get a 1-3%
of that gets thrown away or recycled.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. But, you know, if, you know, Pat or Greg, some of the folks that we have on our team, you know, have a relationship, have a following, you know, people say, hey, you need to talk to Greg. That's how business is done in a community bank. And then once we get them in, our big challenge has always been, you get them through the door, we'll get you. Because it's just a different experience walking through the Resurgence Bank door versus, you know, the big bank. We know people by name. It's warmer, more inviting. And so once we can get people to walk through, we think there's a big experience difference there.
It's got to be a challenge because you're right there on La Vista Road, right where the old Fuddruckers used to be.
That's right.
Which I enjoyed, but that's okay.
Many
not enough people
did.
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Right.
But so you're right there with some of the big national banks. They've right. got locations all around you, brick and mortar spots. Mm-hmm. You got some that have locations inside grocery stores. Mm-hmm. They're all around you. They're on TV. They're on radio. They've got their face and their name out there. Mm-hmm. And there you are pulling in those local customers. How does right. it work?
Well, they are one of our biggest allies in this respect. You go into a big bank and you need some help, and they say, we'll call 1-800-BIG-BANK, mm-hmm. so to speak. Or, you know, get in this queue and we'll get to you when we can. And at some point, you know, it's a hassle to change banks. But at some point, those guys has frustrated a client enough to say, this is just not right. I should be treated better. And they look around, and, you know, through some of the efforts that we've done from a marketing standpoint, they hear about us, they walk in, and then they say, oh, this is what it should be. And so we love being around the larger banks because they do a good job of frustrating the client. And we're there to say, hey, you deserve better, and we can do all the things that the big banks can, but we'll know you by name.
Is that part of your background? Before you started Resurgence, were you part of the big banks?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so you got to see it firsthand a little bit.
Right,
because
yeah.
it's gone the direction where a lot of these big banks across the country maybe are getting away from the brick and mortar locations, kind of following, you know, you've seen it in insurance with Esurance. There's right. no brick and mortar location. It's all over the internet. Right. It's all over the phone, and there's no interpersonal communication.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, with different client bases and really ages is where you end up. You know, the millennials, as we refer to them, you know, really into trying to do everything online. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of them could care less.
If they could do their banking by text message, they would.
That's right. So that may not necessarily, you know, we can do all the online, but they may have no interest in changing because they have no real interest in a relationship. You know, they just want it to work. Mm-hmm. We can do that. But, you know, you have a small business owner comes in and they need financing for X project. You got to understand that. You gotta listen, and that's where we can do that. Our folks, by and large, have 25-plus years experience. You walk into a big bank, and you're dealing with a branch manager who probably does not know how to loan money to a small business. Mm-hmm. So the kind of things you get from us is experience, knowledge, listening, and then we'll customize a solution versus what I used like to say is, you know, one size does not fit all, and the big guys like to do that.
Resurgence Bank, you'll find them right there, La Vista Road, just down the street from 285. You can also find them at resurgencebank.com. Charles, we'll circle around and talk with you a little bit more in a minute. But Bill Rosenfeld from Rosenfeld's Jewelry, we want to get to you. So talk to me a little bit about the jewelry business, because this is another situation, just like Charles is talking about, where you've got these national outlets that do heavy advertising. Why are customers picking you instead of the big national brands?
Well, one of the main things that we offer, we've had a vision for many years, maybe 10 or 12 or 13 years, with the technology in our industry changing a little bit. And we've kept up with that technology. We have computerized designing, CAD/CAM, 3D printing. So if a customer comes into our store, we can actually take their vision of what a piece of jewelry would look like and put it on a screen for them, put it in 3D, twist it around, set stones in it actually while they're visualizing exactly what is happening. Then we can take that file that we've made with our CAD/CAM equipment and send that to a 3D printer. And actually that printer will print the ring in a wax, and then we can manufacture the ring right in our store. And it's U.S. made. Most of the jewelry you see today from the big box stores is made in China.
Hmm.
So the manufacturing in this country has sort of gone away.
Now, what you're talking about in keeping up with technology with your small business, that's got to be a significant investment to have all this cutting-edge technology.
That's why we know Charles.
When you talk about custom design, is that something you're seeing more and more customers coming in looking for?
Well, today's bride, they don't want what mommy had. They don't want the yellow gold. They want the white gold. And you could have $5 million worth of rings sitting in your showcase, and they can't find one they like.
Hmm.
And we're seeing that more and more and more. So they like one ring from this showcase, a part of that ring, another part from a different showcase, you know, and we can put all that together for them and make it customized just to their taste, exactly what they're looking for. And we manufacture it right there before their eyes, and they have a part in that. You know, they can come and see the 3D drawing before we actually make the ring. We can make the wax. They can try it on their finger. We can play with the diamonds and set that around for them. And it's a experience for them. And they've actually had a hand in how their ring is being made.
When I was getting married, believe it or not, it was my wife, my then fiance, who was the easy one. She went right in and picked out a ring for me. I have my grandfather's wedding ring, and he had gotten married back in 1951. It's essentially just an old piece of tin that was basically being held together, but we got the idea, let's buy a wedding band, and let's have this on the inside of the wedding band, because
right.
It wasn't something you could wear just by itself. And they were able to kind of cut it open and customize it and put an engraving in there and everything, and that was pretty cool. That's some of the stuff that you're doing, I guess.
Yeah, we're doing that plus more. I mean, you know, we're actually making a ring just from scratch to that. And we work for three manufacturing companies, plus I don't know how many stores in the Atlanta area, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, to make customized wedding bands to match rings that you can't wait and order it from China. It takes 13 weeks mm-hmm. or so for a ring, and we can make it within a week or so. So it keeps everyone happy.
How much of your business is done in the store as opposed
All
to
of
online?
It.
Really?
Yeah. We do very little. The national average is about 10% of the people. 9% probably buy online. Most people want hands-on. They don't want to buy a diamond online.
How do you get the word out? Because jewelry especially, you got these big brands and these big chain companies that are all over radio, they're all over billboards and stuff like that. So they swamp the market. They have name recognition. How do you get people into your store?
Word of mouth is usually the best that we've found. But we do local publications to get the word out. We have a website that we use. We are also on Facebook, and we do a daily blog on Facebook.
And you mentioned that website, RosenfeldsJewelryLTD.com. How about awards that you've won?
We have won this year, well, we've won 5 design awards. We won 3 this year between Alabama and Georgia at the Georgia Jewelers Convention in Opelika, Alabama this year. We won 2nd place with a cross that we designed with diamonds in it, and that was under $3,000. Over $3,000, we won 1st place with a custom design ring that we made with a 1.25 carat diamond in the center, and it was pretty sharp looking. And then we won the best overall for the show with a bracelet that we designed.
Very cool. Last question before we move on. I know the old standard, I guess, is that an engagement ring ought to cost you about 2 months' salary. Is that still the case? Is that still where we are?
Well, that's what De Beers wants everyone to think. But that's not necessarily true. You know, we don't push people in that direction. You know, buy what you can afford.
There are financing options and everything else.
There are all kinds of financing options, and we have those available to our customers also.
All right, again, check out Rosenfeld's Jewelry, rosenfeldsjewelryltd.com. Bill, we'll talk with you a little bit more coming up. But let's finish with our last guest, Ben Kushner. He's the head of Ben F. Kushner Company. They're on Twitter at the BFKCO. Check them out, bfkco.com. And you got a big development coming to Tucker.
We do. We've got a 203,000 square foot shopping center called Tucker Meridian. It's at the corner of North Lake Parkway and La Vista Road. It was an existing property that we purchased in 2005, 2006, known as La Vista Office Park. The office park was built in 1972, mm-hmm. and it was a really good office park when it was built. It was one of the first suburban office parks built in the United States. And it housed a number of large companies. Sherwin-Williams was there for a long time. A lot of large attorneys were there for a long time. A lot of doctors and dentists. And it really was very successful. But as times change, you know, times sort of change from the when I first got into the business, where people wanted to live in a more sedate environment, moving out of the cities out into what was then the country.
Right. You know? Not anymore.
And now the trend really is people want more of the hustle and bustle of life. You know, they really want more in-town kind of living. You know, the parents who moved out to the suburbs, their kids want to live in town. And Tucker is so well positioned. It is really very accessible to Buckhead, to Brookhaven, to the perimeter. You know, it would only be hop and a jump. It's not that far, you know, from the new Falcon Stadium. It's very accessible there. It'll be very accessible to the Braves Stadium. And there's that trend that's coming out. If you follow in Atlanta, North Druid Hills, or Dresden Drive, out from Brookhaven to towards Tucker, towards Claremont, towards La Vista. Mm-hmm. And if you go straight on La Vista, then you come into the middle of Buckhead. It's just not that far. And that's the trend. You're seeing single family homes being torn down and redeveloped into townhouses and more close, more density. And so I think what we did with our property on North Lake was to target the large retail tenants that weren't in the area. You know, that was the ones that we went after. And the North Lake Tucker area had been somewhat dormant for a long time. The last development in Tucker was the Target, and it's about 10 or 12 years mm-hmm. old. The shopping centers around North Lake were built in the 80s. They're old, but they're 98% full. The market is tight. Mm-hmm. The market is very tight. There's definitely a need for retail space. There's very, very few vacancies there. So we went after a number of tenants that decided to go there. We have Dick's Sporting Goods that's going to go there. We've got Ross Dress for Less that's signed on to go there. We have Hobby Lobby that signed on to go there. We just got an approval from DSW Shoes to go there. And we also have Mattress Firm, Jimmy John's. I mean, it's going to be a really nice shopping center, and it's going to take the immediate area that our property is in and really refurbish it. The office park, you know, basically is obsolete, so we're tearing it down, and we'll be redeveloping this. I hope to start, we'll be starting our initial construction very shortly, in the next few weeks, I hope. And then after that, we'll probably start vertical construction, probably in September or October.
What's the target date?
Target date to have it open is September of 16.
Wow. That's quick.
So about a year from now.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is DeKalb Business Today and DeKalb Business Radio. Matt Holmes talking with Ben Kushner, the head of Ben F. Kushner Company, commercial real estate development. So what's the conversation like when you go to a Ross, you go to a Dick's, and you say, we have this site, we're ready to develop, we want you to be a tenant? How do you sell them?
Well, you sell them on what I just said. Basically, look, here, you do like a pushpin map. You know, you're here, you're here, you're here. This is the demographic. These are the type of people you're serving and where you are. These are the type of people. These are similar people where you're not. So, you know, you should consider this based on, you know, your market share that you're trying to get in each area. And then they have their own, you know, they do their own study. If they have any interest whatsoever, they have their own studies, their own people who go out and they take a look. It's a long process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when I was 12, I used to sell Fuller brushes, and, you know, I could close a deal and, you know, over a glass of water if I was sweating hard enough, you know. But this is a much longer thing. You jump through a lot of different tiers, and it has to go through several committees, and it probably takes 6 months to do, just to get them to agree to go there. And then you start the lease process, and that's another, you know, ordeal to go through, you know. But but it's worth it in the end. You know, you have to be patient. You have to have a lot of patience, and you have to have a good staff. And this project too was difficult in that we had to get zoning. It's a 22 acre property, which is why I liked it so much. I mean, it's a 22 acre site between two major interchanges off
sitting right on 285, yeah,
right off 285. But 2 acres wasn't zoned. We had to go through a zoning process. We had our excellent zoning attorney, Kathy Zickert, who worked hard with the county and with the neighbors and so forth to meet, to try to compromise on things they wanted. And, you know, we finally got it zoned. So, I mean, there's a lot of hurdles to jump. You know, my strategy before the 2000s was really just go in and buy an existing property, remodel it, redo it, try to add value to it that way, bring in better tenants, or raise the rents and so forth. But since 2000, there's just not a lot of product out there, and you really have to go out and build your own. So that's what we've been doing really for the last 15 years.
Now, you mentioned the word patience, Ben, and it's something we talked with Charles DeWitt just a moment ago about, is the fact that you mentioned that you bought this property, what, about 2006?
Yeah.
So a couple years before everything went south.
Right.
I would imagine you could have sat back and said, okay, I paid X for this 2 years ago, and now it's worth a lot less. But you have the patience. Here we are, 2015, and it's finally going into development. Is that coincidence, or did you have to wait to about this point?
No, I wanted to develop it in 2008.
Okay.
And then there was 2008.
Uh-huh.
So really in 2008, you know, there was a total occlusion of the financial market, so there really wasn't money available to do it. We had a few tenants lined up to go, and then of course, when the economy tanked, they retrenched in their movements towards going there or going anywhere else. So they're just starting back up. You know, there's still a lot of retail. I think retail is probably the slowest to recover from the recession. Apartments are just booming. Mm-hmm. They're just booming all over. Industrial is pretty good.
You know? Was there any thought to make this mixed use and have residential there?
We really don't have the room for that. You know, we really didn't have the room for mixed use, and I just don't think, and the type of tenants that we have don't want to be in a mixed use development. They want to be in a big box development.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, if I, instead of having to do, you know, 60 leases and a residential component here, I can do, you know, 10 leases and pretty much achieve the same multiple, you know, on cost and so forth. So, you know, I think there should be some mixed use in Tucker. You know, there should be Tucker North Lake, the mall at North Lake, which is still very dormant, not really reaching its potential, would be a splendid site for a mixed use development or a campus of some sort. So, I mean, there's room for that. And, you know, you've got, it's close to CDC, it's close to Emory, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, still there's a lot of different, you know, from technology to pharma, to medical and so forth. And you see a lot of this coming into Atlanta now, you know.
Now, I mentioned at the top of the show your website, bfkco.com, where you have a very entertaining and very well-written memoir-type section. And you talk a lot about some of the mistakes you've made, some of the missteps that you've learned from over your 40-plus years in business. As you talk to young entrepreneurs, what are some of the mistakes you've made, one of the big ones maybe, that you've learned from that has made you a better real estate developer?
Well, I think the biggest mistake that I made is that I pretty much had every property in Buckhead in the 80s, early to mid 80s. I mean, I knew every owner. I probably had a head start. And then I got interested in just doing shopping centers and I kind of dropped it. I should have hired somebody. If I wanted to do the other thing, I should have hired somebody to stay in there. That's where this points out a problem I think that entrepreneurs have, in that entrepreneurs like myself can be very productive, but they're not very good at management and at management strategies. This goes back to, you know, the fact that I have a degree in history, which I use every day. I think it's very useful. I have a degree in journalism, which I use every day, and I think it's very useful. But I didn't take one business course, you know, when I was at University of North Carolina, although I teach business now, you know. It's like...
Ironic.
I know. I feel like Lou Holtz, who said, I'm probably the only person who ever wrote a book that never read one. So, you know, it's... But it's, you know, it's I've made mistakes, and you should learn from your mistakes. I learn a lot more from my mistakes than I do from my successes.
And let's bring it to the full table. Charles, some of the mistakes that you've made or you've seen made that maybe others could learn from.
Lots of them. you know, I kind of going on with what Ben said, you know, as with a bank, you know, there's so many jobs within a bank that you I don't know how to do many of them. And so I think sometimes early on, you're really looking at that bottom line and you're trying to either squeak out a profit or not show as big of a loss. And sometimes you take a really short-sighted view. And I think there's times, you know, over the last few years that if we would have said, you know what, you know, we're going to invest in this person because we know in 2-3 years, the returns are going to be great. But sometimes we have that short-term view, right. And that short-term view can hold you back, frankly, from what that. So, you know, I think what I try to think about now, and we're in a much different position in 2015 than we were in 2008 and mm-hmm. 2009, is, you know, we're investing. And that may mean you take a step back to take a couple steps forward.
Bill Rosenfeld, you've had your jewelry business for 13 years. What have you learned?
Well, going back a little bit, I think my biggest mistake was that, you know, I didn't get a degree in business. and, you know, I worked on the bench for many years with my hands and that kind of thing. And I've got a great eye for designing and that type thing. But I really didn't learn how to manage a jewelry store. And I've never worked for another jewelry store. I've always been in business for myself. I started out, you know, working for other stores, but in a trade shop which was my own trade shop. And I had other jewelers working for me. And that's sort of how I came up through the ranks, so to speak. And then I opened my own store without any experience as being a manager or a owner. you know, without the business background. So, and later I realized that, you know, with all the problems that sort of developed, and we didn't have a lot of money back then either. So, you know, it was just a day-to-day grind, so to speak. But if I'd have had, you know, I could have made better decisions as far as what path I wanted to go down, you know.
It's interesting, all the three of you mentioned the fact that, you know, you need to have that business background. But at some point, you've got to step up and you're going to run your own business. You're going to be the man who's in charge managing people. And as we look at it, the Falcons just up the road in Flowery Branch today, Dan Quinn's the new head coach. He's never been a head coach at any level of football in his life. He's always worked for somebody else.
Right.
And now he branches out on his own because he's had great mentors. Have you guys had mentors that have helped you along the way?
Absolutely, I have. Had several good mentors. I mean, as far as the jewelry end of the business, getting started, that type thing. I had a guy that sort of took me under his wing. His name was Ernest Massey. He's passed away now, you know, maybe 20 years or so. But he took me under his wing and taught me everything he knew.
Charles?
Absolutely. You know, starting with a big bank, and, you know, I started right out of college, and you think, you know, I did have a business degree, and you know how to, you know, look at numbers and all that. But, you know, how to analyze numbers and how to look at a good loan request are two different things. You and I had a couple people early on that took me under their wing and showed me the way. And yeah, I think I'm a better banker for it.
How about you, Ben?
Well, clearly, my first boss, Roy Ludwig, I went to work for a company called Barton and Ludwig Commercial Real Estate that was eventually purchased by Coldwell Banker. But Roy was a fabulous manager, very tough. I mean, we were working basically 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. He said, you know, he used to say real estate is the easiest low-paying job in the world and the hardest high-paying job in the world.
Okay.
And he got us really committed to just working all the time. I mean, it was, and I looked up to him to the extent that I really wanted to please him. You know, I was only 21, and that's pretty young.
Yeah.
And he hired me. I mean, I thought it'd be easy to get a job in real estate, and I went around, you know, and I was 21, 22-year-old kid, and most people said, you know, how much experience have you had in sales and this? None, you know. And he took me in and trained me and got me great work habits. And I think I owe a lot of my success today to Roy and also to my folks. They were hard disciplinarians, Army people, and taught me basically the most important thing they taught me was the virtue of honor, you know. And I was shocked when I got into the business world and found out people didn't keep their word. I mean, you know, that's kind of really naive. But I still tried to do that. I mean, that was very important to them. And so, you know, I think those two, my folks and Roy, were probably my two greatest mentors.
With just a couple minutes left here on DeKalb Business Today, I sit here around the table with three members of the Tucker Northlake CID Board of Directors. So got to ask you guys about that, the importance of getting involved in that, the importance of having a community improvement district to help support and grow local business. Charles, we'll start with you.
Well, I think it's been talked about earlier today. I think that Tucker Northlake is a hidden gem within Metro Atlanta. Ben talked a lot about it. You're still, quote, in town. You're either just inside or just outside 285, you know, depending where you are. You have incredible demographics around our area. And for whatever reason, it just has not been developed in a way that it can be. And I'm particularly excited. I literally just was elected, you know, last month, and I have not been to a board meeting yet. So, but I'm really excited about what the CID has done and, more importantly, can do for that Tucker Northlake area and really to spur economic development along that La Vista corridor. So Bill's our chairperson, and he can probably talk a little more.
Yeah, and Bill, as a businessman, there's a lot of demands on your time and all three of your time. For you guys to put this on top of all that and add an extra obligation, it has to mean something to you.
Absolutely. And Ben and Charles both are welcome to our board. We've established a great board, and we are looking forward to making this area the area, live, work, and play type of outlook. We just completed our master plan, which involves three areas of the North Lake Mall area, the Tucker Business District, and then we've got the Emory Hospital over here on Lawrence Hill Highway. And so we've got some great plans for all three of those areas, and we want to coordinate it all together. You know, we're looking at bike paths and all kinds of things that will improve the area. Cleanup is really important, landscaping to make our areas look better, we'll attract more businesses. We've got some growth potential, you know, and it's the prime, we think, we're center of DeKalb. It's just a prime area to be in. So we're looking forward to these guys joining our board, and I think we're going to, you know, make some real strong headway this next year or two.
And Ben, we'll give you the last word.
Well, Tucker's competing. I mean, Tucker is going to compete against Sandy Springs, Brookhaven, and these places. I mean, and we've got to step up and provide that type of infrastructure that Bill just mentioned to attract the type of people that want to come in, the young people, the millennials, and so forth. And I think Tucker, DeKalb County is so big and so diverse that there really hasn't been a lot of attention paid to the part of DeKalb where Tucker is. And Tucker's stepping up to take care of it themselves. Hopefully, in my hope, that Tucker will be a city soon, and that the CID is going to provide things to make the area really unique and attractive to the people that we need to have come in and the businesses that we need to have come in. And I'm happy to try to participate in helping them do that.
All right. And again, the target date on opening Tucker Meridian, September 16.
September of 2016.
And we'll look forward to that. Ben Kushner, head of Ben F. Kushner Company. You can find out more about his commercial real estate development firm at bfkco.com. Follow them on Twitter at the BFKCO. Charles DeWitt, the president and CEO of Resurgence Bank. You'll find more about them at resurgencebank.com. And Bill Rosenfeld of Rosenfeld's Jewelry. Find more on them at rosenfeldsjewelryltd.com. Gentlemen, we appreciate you taking the time. It's been a great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
And that'll do it for this edition of DeKalb Business Today and DeKalb Business Radio. We'll be back here at noon with another show, another great panel of guests. Until then, for executive producer Jason Becknell, my name is Matt Holmes, and this has been the voice of commerce in DeKalb County, DeKalb Business Radio.